It's Wednesday, March 1st, and this is Geek Nights. Tonight, Scott reports on the New York Comic Con, and we talk about comic distribution in the United States.
Let's do this!
So today, at work, I realized that I know a lot of you might read Dilbert and laugh, haha, Dilbert is funny and fake. I'm here to tell you that Dilbert is the 100% truth of what it's like to work in a large company.
Yep. I mean, I've been reading Dilbert for a long time, perhaps as long as Dilbert has existed, and I always knew all of it was true, and it was shown
to me in horrid relief today as I sat through an hour-long meeting that accomplished nothing while various people babbled. It just, oh my god. Tomorrow, I have meetings almost all day.
This is why I have a job with no meetings.
I think if it snows tomorrow, I'm not going to work. But if I end up going to work, I think I'm going to bring my DS. And if anyone says anything, I'll pretend I'm using it to take notes. I don't know. I'll pretend it's a PDA.
One of my wise old college professors always said, if you get a job with no meetings. And I followed that advice, and I'm glad for it.
Now, see, a lot of meetings are useful. Like, if I have to meet with a bunch of developers to figure something out about a server, I have a meeting. Figure it out. If we're going to plan something, we have a meeting. Plan it. The problem is, any meeting we call is a useful meeting. If I call a meeting for, you know, a project I'm working on, we'll get a bunch of stuff done, and then we'll go and do the rest of our work. The problem is, middle management types will call meetings that don't serve any useful purpose. And in the epitome of Dilbertisms, today, I learned, basically, well, it wasn't just today, but it's culminated today. People complain that we're having too many useless meetings. And I shit you not, now we're going to have a meeting to determine how to reduce the number of meetings.
Yep.
I'm not kidding. Everyone thinks this is a good idea. Well, everyone in management, everyone in the department knows it's crap, but okay. I'm done ranting.
I know how to reduce the number of meetings. You ready for this? No meetings. None.
Nah, you need what do you mean no meetings? I can't meet with someone in the hallway?
No, we schedule it. Everyone comes to the conference room.
That's really the only way to talk to a lot of people in a group. You have to schedule it. Otherwise, someone might not be there, and then you can't do whatever you were going to do. Meetings are good. The problem is bad meetings.
I don't even know why you need meetings. Just email back and forth until you come to whatever. You know, why do you all have to schedule a time to stop working and go be in the same room as everyone else?
You've never worked on a large project, have you?
Yeah, that's all I work on is large projects.
What do you mean large?
As in, we need to make this big piece of software for a whole bunch of people.
Okay, I'm talking about meetings like, you know, we're deploying a T1 and servers on the other side of it and a whole giant thing that includes like 10 different departments and then a giant, you know, hundreds of people.
So the leaders of the 10 departments email each other and come to a conclusion.
No, the leaders of the departments just sit down in a meeting and hash it all out and argue it. It's easier that way.
I don't know. We don't seem to have a problem.
You're a freaking CS major. You sit and write code in a freaking dungeon.
Yeah, it's not a dungeon.
It's a dungeon.
It's an empty office in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, it's basically a dungeon.
No, because it's in the same room as the office-y people. They annoy me.
But anyway, in something you're probably more interested in hearing, you remember my KatsuCon coverage? Well, one thing that I talked about was that the video game room was awesome, and it was, in fact, awesome, you know, with the old school games. But I didn't remember the name of the company that provided the games. It's called Videotopia.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently they have a collection of almost 2,000 old school classic games.
Whoa, they have a collection of 2,000 games.
2,000 arcade cabinets.
Can you go to Videotopia's warehouse and play them all?
I don't know, but I do know, because actually, Aaron Ryder, he's the guy who did the video game room at KatsuCon, posted in our forums. So if you go in the forums, I keep pimping the forums, but there's a lot of you who don't go there. He posted about another event where you can go see all these cabinets and play them. Apparently they're there every year.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not going to say what the event is, so yeah.
So also, for anyone who actually likes mad old games like that, you may not know this, but there is a place called Fun Spot. It's
in
Weir's Beach, New Hampshire, which is on Lake Winnipesaukee. Yeah, I know how to say it because I've been there like 3 times.
Yeah, you didn't know how to say Sault Ste. Marie.
Whatever. This place is perhaps the largest arcade in the United States. They have more pinball machines than, like, I don't know, all of Atlantic City. It's just insane. They have a bowling alley and a mini golf and a go-kart and every old game, every new game, ticket games, everything. It's insane. And you should go there sometime in your life for awesome.
Or actually, if you happen to live in the Midwest near Sandusky, Ohio. Now, I'll warn you, I haven't been to Cedar Point in, God, like 5 years. But when I used to go, in Cedar Point, there used to be a giant old school arcade, and it was pretty much nothing but ass old arcade cabinets. Every classic game in the world. I don't know if it's still there. Anyone who lives there could tell me if it's still there. If it is still there, I might have to make a trip out to Sandusky.
There is also a very large arcade at Sesame Place. If you ever visit Sesame Place, which is the amusement park of Sesame Street, they have a very large, awesome arcade there.
All right.
It's next to the cargo nets, I believe. Which are also awesome.
So anyway, in the news, AMD subpoenaed Skype.
Right, so the story here is Skype lets you talk to people with VoIP.
Yeah, voice over IP. VoIP.
It's just an internet phone, basically. Skype has a conferencing feature where you can talk to multiple people at once.
All right, so far so good.
By default, for free, without paying any money, you can talk to, I think, 5 people at once?
Yes, 5 people. With Skype 2.0.
Right. With Skype 2.0, you can talk in a conversation with 5 people. If you have an Intel processor, as in a Pentium 4 or one of those Core Duo things, or an Intel processor, you can talk to 10 people at once.
10 people, eh?
And if you have an AMD processor or any other company that's not Intel, you can only talk to 5.
Now, they claim that the reason they did this was simply because other chips that aren't Intel don't have the capability of handling 10 conversations at the same time.
As someone who knows a whole lot about technology and processors, bullshit.
Yeah, I think we need a little wave file to signify bullshit.
There is no technological reason why a non-Intel processor cannot handle the processing necessary for a 10-person internet phone conversation. None whatsoever. The only reason is because in the code of Skype, they wrote, if processor equals Intel, then limit equals 10. If processor equals AMD, limit equals 5.
Now, why would they do this, you might ask?
Money, money.
Yeah,
money.
Intel had a little deal going with them. Little deal.
So AMD comes and says, we got a subpoena. And the subpoena says, show us your little dealie. So we can see if your little dealie is against the law.
Yeah, this is part of the long, ongoing antitrust case against Intel that it looks more and more like AMD is going to win.
Yeah. If you don't notice, AMD actually has computers with AMD processors that you can just buy at Staples. Like, it used to be you couldn't get Linux in the store, you couldn't get AMD in the store. Now you can just buy an HP computer with an AMD in it just easily.
Yeah.
So, Intel's really,
Well, you know what? They were the big evil for so long.
You know what's really scary, though? Intel's new Core Duo processors are like the hot shit. Those are the ones that are in all the MacBooks and things. But you can get them in PCs, too. And that's really where I'm actually thinking, trying to find a laptop that has one. Because Intel really kicks ass at the laptop processors. AMD, not so much, because they're not so power efficient in the AMDs.
Yeah, but you know what? For desktops, AMD hands down.
Yeah, because this is so cheap. You know, versus the power you get. It's just dumb to buy an Intel. Unless you're loaded. If you win the lottery, I would probably buy Intels. You know, a whole bunch of them.
Eh.
Maybe. Recently, there seems to be a lot of websites and various things talking about the lessons World of Warcraft teaches you and, you know, what the world would be like if everyone acted the way they act in MMORPGs.
Now, we're not fans of World of Warcraft, if you haven't gathered that already.
And mainly because of the reasons these people are talking about. So, these things tend to amuse me. I've been reading all of them. But today, there was the best one. Someone made a video of him and his friends acting out what the world would be like if people acted the way they act in World of Warcraft.
I believe the quote was, get an epic car, noob.
Yeah, and, they pretty much go through each behavior. Like, they'll be like, the first one is, one of them is ganking. That's, you know, when you kill someone, and then right after they come back to life, you kill them again.
All
right,
now, this is something that has pissed me off about you World of Warcraft people. Why do you call that ganking? For the longest time, ganking was, I mean, I've played MMOs since before some of you kids were born. Not to sound like an old man, but goddamn it. Ganking was when you killed someone and then you took their stuff, or when you saw someone and they were dead and you picked up their stuff, or when someone killed something and then you grabbed the thing that the monster dropped.
Apparently, according to Wikipedia, there are many terms, there are many meanings for the word gank, but it says, amongst other definitions, gank is a slang term which refers to theft by force. So, but they, in this video, they refer to ganking as when you kill someone, they come back to life and you kill them again. So what they do is they have a guy and they beat him up, and then he goes to the hospital, and then as he's walking out of the hospital, they beat him up.
Yes, Ted, that was the joke.
Yeah. So they're all like that, and some of them are really, really funny, especially when it involves our friend, Leroy.
Yeah, there's a bit of a... Give it a chance. Watch the whole thing before you pass judgment.
Yeah, it's a little long and it's not well-paced, but it's still funny.
Yes. All right, so my thing was actually sent to me over AIM by Emily while I was at work being bored. I had some downtime. She sent me this link. And this link is basically an archive of evidence showing that Superman, you know, as in Superman in the cape flies around superhero, is a giant dick.
He is a giant dick.
Well, this is proof. It shows every dickish thing he's done. And I gotta say, he's done some dickish things.
Really?
Now, the one thing that's surprising is that he denies water to a person dying of thirst more often than is statistically probable.
Wow.
There are at least 3 instances of this in this archive, all from different comics by different people at different times, and they're all Superman standing there, and he's got water, and someone's dying, and he won't give it to him.
I mean, isn't Superman supposed to save people's lives? Why is he denying people water in the desert?
He kills Lois Lane at least 8 or 9 times.
Well, you know, she gets out of hand. She needs a little slap to get her back in line.
In addition to this being utterly hilarious, it has all these other sections. One is just an archive of pictures from old comics where I guess people didn't realize just how homoerotic the images were back then.
Well, you know, you can always do better with Batman and Robin than you can with Superman.
Oh, that archive is from any comic, so there is a lot of Batman and Robin there.
Oh, okay.
There's one that Superman's a dick, and there's all these other archives. The site is worth going to.
Mm-hmm.
The only other thing I learned from it was that, one, if ever in a Superman story, red kryptonite appears, that just means they ran out of ideas, because red kryptonite, like, splits Superman in two, or just makes crazy crap happen, so they have a plot.
It's really hard to write stories about Superman, because Superman just wins every time, it's just bleh. You have to write a story about something else, and then use Superman as your deus ex machina or something like that. That's really
the
only way
to
use
him.
Half
the time, you know how they did that? It was Superman being controlled by giant bugs, and then everyone has to stop him.
Yeah.
That happened at least twice.
Why is he so prone to giant bug control?
You know why? Because he's a giant asshole. Hmm. He's not that smart either.
No, he really isn't that smart. You'd think being, you know... Because that's the problem, is all the Superman stories still take place within, like, the first human life length of his life. If you, like, waited around till Superman was, like, 300, he'd be smarter, you know?
No, he'd be dead, you know, kryptonite and all.
I thought he's immortal unless kryptonite comes around.
Yeah, so I'll just kryptonite him.
That doesn't seem to work. It's happened a bunch of times, and he always seems to win.
You know why? Because
I don't think he's going to fall for it anymore.
Because the people who write it wouldn't kill him, because that's the end of their revenue stream.
Yeah, I'm going to talk about that in a few minutes.
Yeah, I only brought this site up because it's been around for a while, but today, while usually we use today to talk about anime and a little bit of comics, today we're going mad comics and a tiny bit of anime.
Yep.
So anyway, on to the comics.
So if you did first, I want to talk about the New York Comic Con. It was bad.
Debacle comes to mind.
I like to say debacle.
Clusterfuck.
All right, now, a lot of people have said a lot of things. The first thing a lot of people point out is that what was going on in the con, as in the things happening there that were supposed to happen, were actually quite good. And while I did not experience them, despite my attempt to do so, I really can't disagree. I mean, you know, the list of just people that were there, if you're into, you know, if you know who these people are, is quite astounding.
Now, I have a counterpoint to that, in that according to people who were there, there were all those panels, and they all look kind of good, right?
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, despite the fact that the exhibit area was so full of people, the state police were turning people away, almost no one went to panels, and even the panels that happened were mostly empty rooms.
Well, the problem is some panels that people cared about were just full up because people were trying to escape the crowded exhibit room.
Yeah, but every
other
panel...
The panels that no one cared about, no one went to because they didn't want to get stuck out.
Yeah, then there were the panels where people couldn't go to them because the people who were doing them were turned away by security.
Yep, Douglas Rushkoff, one of the guys I wanted to see there, who I didn't get to see because I didn't get in, which I'll tell you about, he actually couldn't get to one of his signings because he got stuck out. And he was a guest, an official guest of the con.
So maybe before you talk about what was going to happen at the con, you should talk about what happened at the con?
So I arrive at this con, and it's a Comic-Con in the Javits Center.
Now, I was going to go, and the only reason I didn't was that I actually got sick at KatsuCon, and all last week I was fairly ill and full of NyQuil while I was doing the show. So Saturday morning, you know, I wake up around 8 to catch the train with Scott, and I didn't feel like going. I just rolled over and went to bed.
Mm-hmm.
Our friend Scott Johnson, who was also going to go, was also sick, also from KatsuCon, so he didn't go either. So I know I talked KatsuCon up for being awesome. It gets one more point of awesome for saving me from the New York Comic Con.
Yep, luck be you. So I get there, and if you've ever been to the Javits Center, it's not like other convention centers. It's a main hall on the first floor, and first of all, the lobby is huge. The lobby could be an entire convention room, but it's not. It's just a lobby. But it's actually good because a lot of convention centers don't have big enough lobbies, and this one can pretty much handle anything you throw at it. It's an invincible lobby with a coat check in the basement and plenty of room for registration lines and booths and all kinds of stuff. There's even like a whole food court up there somewhat decently priced food.
The Javits is where the New York Auto Show is.
Yeah.
The Javits is
where every convention in New York is because it's the only place you can put one. There is no other convention center.
Now, the Javits has a lot of problems in that it's on the west side of Manhattan, all alone.
It's hard to get to it by subway. You have to take a taxi or a bus or your feet.
Yeah, there are only two buses that I know of that go to it, and they're real inconvenient. The subway doesn't go to it.
Couple shuttles that go there, but it's not worth it. You're better off just walking. Get a subway as close as you can, which is probably like Penn Station, and walk.
Yeah.
Or take a taxi if you got money, or if you're in a rush, whatever. So you go into the Javits, a giant lobby. On the main floor, there are three giant rooms, which is the main convention area. This place is huge. These are like super high ceilings, super large in square footage rooms. We're talking tremendous football field, many times rooms. And usually when there's a convention, they take all three of those rooms combined. Very rarely do they split up those rooms, but they can, and they have in the past. But usually it's one big room. Upstairs, there's like this T-shaped room, and it's pretty small relative, but it's you know, it's not small overall. And, you know, usually cons will use that as an auxiliary room. And downstairs, there is the downstairs hall, which is just a convention hall, and it's the downstairs hall. It's not as big as the main hall. It's just for little cons and things like that, you know, like a little tiny trade show, something like that. So I get there, and I fully expect the con to be taking up all three of the main, you know, the giant, giant rooms. Much to my amazement, it is in the downstairs little tiny convention hall. And I said, uh-oh, that's not right. It's going to be mighty cramped in there. Then I saw something else. Not only was it in the downstairs convention hall, it was one half of the downstairs convention hall. The other half of it was occupied by a travel show.
Great.
So there was a line going out the door, but the line didn't intimidate me because I've been in longer lines than that. This thing was like this is a wuss line compared to lines I've been in.
The line for the concert, the LARC concert at Otakon 2 years ago, that went like down the street around several blocks and then just off into the distance.
Yeah, this is a wuss line. I mean, this thing was around only one corner of a building. It was maybe less than one football field length out the door of the Javits. So I just got into it like, you know, patiently, got pretty close to the building too.
Huh?
You know, and there was stuff going on the line. A lot of people coming, walking back and forth, up and down the line, peddling stuff, you know, trying to sell their crap, give you their free little card with a coupon on it or something, or inviting you to go to a museum that has a comics exhibit, you know, all kinds of shit. Bunch of nerds hanging out in line. Surprisingly, for a comic convention, I only saw like a couple Spider-Man type things. It seemed like the comic nerds would might have like a t-shirt with a Superman or a Spider-Man on it. And I saw more Naruto headbands than I saw anything else.
It seems to me that, I mean, there is this comic culture, but anime fans are the ones that have the conventions.
Yep.
So anime fans are in that convention mindset. So all the anime fans in New York City just came to this for a day. You know, they just came out of the woodwork, and there are numerous.
Yep. It's just weird that the percentage of freaky type of action going on in the convention line was much less than what I was used to. So the line itself was pretty boring compared to what convention lines usually are. Like, I couldn't really get a conversation going on with anyone or make any friends in the line. They were all just kind of bleh. You know, I was like, oh, so, and the people were just like, yeah, whatever.
Wow, God. I mean, even when we went to New York City to see Miyamoto, we just...
No, because those are Nintendo kids. You can talk to them.
Yeah, but anime kids we can talk to. Gamers, we went to UberCon. Everyone we met, we just hung out with.
I think it was just the people I was near in line. Because I knew a lot of... There were a lot of people I know on the inside of the con I could have talked to. Because I kind of know them from online and stuff.
Uh-huh.
So I probably could have gotten good stuff from them. But in the line I was in, everyone was bleh. So then all of a sudden, this guy comes down the line with a megaphone. And he says, we are not selling tickets anymore. We're sold out for today. Go home. We have too many people. He says, if you pre-ordered online, you know, if you already paid for your tickets, you can go and get in. Otherwise, go home.
Now, if that had been where it ended, if they just sold out and they couldn't sell any more tickets, that would have been fantastic. That would have been a huge success. They would have known to get a bigger venue next year.
Yep.
The second part of his statement, where people who had already bought their tickets are guaranteed in, was a filthy lie.
Yep, there were people who had pre-registered who were just not able to get into the convention. Even people who had tickets, VIP tickets, which cost $100, right?
Yeah, state troopers came and made sure no one got in. The fire marshal could have just shut the whole thing down.
Yeah, basically what was happening is because the room was full to the max, they would like let 25 people out and then let 25 people in and let people out and let people in. And the going was really slow. And even if you had, like, even people who were professionals who were supposed to, like, the president of DC Comics couldn't get in because he had to wait for other people to get out. So no matter what your ticket status, you couldn't get into the thing.
And people who were in realized this and wouldn't leave.
Yep, people who were in wouldn't leave because it would take them up to 2 hours to get back in. So people were pretty much staying in this thing as long as they could before leaving. And not only that, while they were in there, it was so crowded you couldn't really stop and do stuff because you would block the way immediately. It was so crowded.
Not only all that, but Scott calls me from the city to tell me, oh, it's terrible, you're lucky you didn't come, I can't get in, it's a mess. And then, you know, I was asleep in bed still at this point. So I wake up, I look online, I figure, all right, I'll go to the New York Comic Con website, see what official announcement they've posted about the situation. They didn't even touch their website. In fact, they were still selling tickets online to the event for most of Saturday.
Yep, until late.
I went through the entire process up until accepting the actual charge to my credit card just to see if I could buy a ticket, and I could.
They didn't stop selling tickets. I don't know if that actually would have gotten you a ticket. Like, if you actually
because they actually took the ticket system down later.
Mm.
And they put up a thing saying, don't buy tickets. If you bought one, we'll contact you. Or yeah. Something to that effect.
Their policy technically was we don't have to give you a refund if we don't want to. But actually, they did make amends and give a lot of people their money back. And they did...
Well, they tried to give all the people who couldn't get in a, all right, tell you what, we'll guarantee that you can come in tomorrow on Sunday, way out. And most people were so pissed they wouldn't take that. They wanted their money.
Yeah. And the other thing is I think they were talking about giving people like special guest status at next year's New York Comic Con, which I think they're going to change. They had a big poster that said New York Comic Con the next time will be these dates in the same place, but I have a feeling they're going to change the date to get the bigger convention hall. At least one of the thirds of it. One of the thirds of it would have been sufficient, I think, for this size con. Two thirds of it would have been perfect. All three of them, maybe a little too big.
Now, this really bothers me just in the sense that it's so unprofessional. I mean, this was a big convention, a real convention. There was a lot of money involved.
Huge.
It was at the Javits in New York City. It's the first one. Now, I would have assumed, because even the crappiest tiny anime con has a contingency plan for what if too many people show up? Or what if not enough people show up? You know, just contingency plans in case a disaster happens. This con had nothing. Not only did they not expect these people, which is understandable, but they had no way to deal with it whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
And these people, I mean, I don't even know what I can say other than that I'm really disappointed in almost everyone involved.
Well, what it comes down to is this. When you run a convention, you have to know the number of people you can fit in the space you have. You know, if you take out a restaurant, it says on the wall, 200 people. So you know you don't let 200 people in, or more than 200 people in. They knew, they should have known, how many people they could have fit into the room they had.
Yeah, Otakon knows. Katsukan knew.
Yep. So they knew how many pre-sells they had online. And I agree that based on the number of pre-sells, that pre-orders, pre-regs, whatever you want to call them, they had, that, you know, the average number for conventions, comic conventions, the number of registrations they would have had on-site would have been well below the limit of the number of people they could fit. However, when the time came, the number of on-site registrations was well beyond what they ever expected or could handle. Yet, that would have been fine too. You know, you didn't expect it, it happened.
But they kept selling them.
They kept selling on-site registrations to the point where they exceeded the limit of the number of people who could be in there.
This is just inexcusable.
Mm-hmm. People are trying to say, oh, the Javits, blah, or the police did it. There was nothing you could do. The fire marshal came in.
Yeah.
Fire marshal shouldn't have come in because you shouldn't have screwed up and put in too many people.
They're lucky the fire marshal didn't just shut it down altogether.
I would have been happier if the fire marshal shut it down, because then you wouldn't have all these, there's a bunch of people online who got in who were like, stop saying bad things about the convention. I got in and it was great. Stop saying bad things about it. It was fun.
You know what that's like? I keep bringing up Penny Arcade quotes, but it was one of them said a while ago, that's like telling a man in a wheelchair, just fucking get up and walk. I can do it.
Yeah. Come on. It's great. Walking is so fun. Come on. I'm in a wheelchair, man. I got, you know, paralyzed legs. I'm Superman, Christopher Reeve, comic convention. Ha ha.
That was probably the thinnest thread.
I tried to make up a joke out of it. Instead, I just said all the parts of the joke.
Yeah, you know what? That's only one step beyond doing the whole, I could make a joke about that, but I won't, which just means you didn't make up a joke and you still wanted to be a funny man.
But you did at least recognize the opportunity for joke.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that's the story of the New York Comic Con. Unless there's something crazy next year, I'm probably not going to go. Like, they would have to... Like, I would need someone who went on Friday to call me and tell me, it was awesome, here are 10 awesome things worth your money, and here's why it's guaranteed that you'll be able to get in, and all kinds of assurances.
Now, my take on all this is that they're really trying to spin it at the New York Comic Con, saying that this is fantastic. It was so huge that next year is going to be crazy. We'll get the works. The problem is, it was huge this year, yeah. How many of those people are so angry? Because you should see some of the posts people are making online about their experience at this con. They're not coming back ever. If they hear New York Comic Con, they'll remember it as that horrible con that sucked, that I'll never go to again.
Well, you know, it's a tough call, and the only way you're going to find out is wait till next year. I mean, it could be that, yeah, a million people show up again trying to get in. Or it could be a million, no one goes because it sucked.
Now, the other thing is, this is my take on the numbers, because not many people came Friday, not many people went Sunday, Saturday was shit crazy. Now, I was probably going to go, and I remember looking at the website trying to decide if I wanted to, and it was about 90-95% trade show crap, you know, buy stuff, we market to you, blah, and 5% cool people doing stuff. At least that seems to be the ratio that I saw. And not many of the events looked at all really interesting. I guess I get more fun at any other kind of con.
But really, a Comic Con is just usually a big room full of booths and panel rooms and stuff on the sides with a little video gaming, a little regular gaming, a little anime action, right?
Yeah.
But what you do at a Comic Con is, unless it's the San Diego Comic Con, which literally takes a day to see all the booths because there are so many, it's insane. This one, if the room wasn't crowded as all hell, you probably could have seen and looked through everything you wanted to see in a couple hours. If you went shopping and tried to purchase, you know, things out of the giant 50-cent boxes full of comics, you could have added maybe 15, 20 minutes per dealer. So maybe in 5 hours you can see the whole entire convention.
Now, here's what, that's the, what I'm getting
the at. Point of the convention, comic conventions anyway, is you do that at some point. You know, you go around and see everything. And then when, you know, you have time to go and meet creators when they have their little signings, and you can actually talk to them like, hey, what's up? And if that doesn't interest you, well, then you're losing a little bit out of, you really not a lot of reason to go. But the final reason to go to a comic convention is you just sit around talking to all the other people there.
Now, that plays along with what I was getting at, is that they basically seem to guess their numbers based on people coming for the whole weekend. Like, they seem to think that people would have some reason to come more than one day.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, they sell a 3-day pass, and they didn't sell many of those ahead of time. Well, no one's going to pre-register for just one day of a convention like this.
That's for sure.
So, all the people like me, who really saw almost nothing they cared about at this con, but wanted to, you know, just check it out, showed up on Saturday. And a lot of people live near New York City, so a lot of people, it was well within their means to just show up for one day suddenly out of the blue.
What also happened, I heard this, I'm not sure how 100% true it is, that the convention, like the people running it, thought the turnout was going to be crummy based on the pre-regs and such.
I saw that too.
And they went around like somewhat apologizing to dealers and exhibitors saying, we're sorry if, you know, if this really sucks, if there isn't going to be a lot of people here. Because they really didn't, you know, they honestly did not know how many people were going to show up. And because they honestly did not think a lot of people were going to show up, they sponsored podcasts and they put commercials on cable television and they advertised in comic books. They advertised like crazy to get people to come to this con. The thing is, that advertising didn't result in pre-regs. It resulted in people showing up Saturday trying to come for a day.
People for whom they did not plan and for whom they had no contingency, and therefore ruined their own convention.
Mm-hmm. The final thing, though, is that the convention got... There were two things on the internet. There was a official statement from the convention, and there was the guy who runs the convention, who actually seems to be a smart guy who knows how to run conventions, except, you know, he made one mistake this time. But basically they said, we're sorry, we screwed up, we messed up, we'll try to make it better next year. You know, so they did admit fault. I don't know what that, you know, that doesn't really do anything for you if you got left out in the cold, but...
It's definitely a step up from the people who try to say, oh, we do no wrong. Because you see that at a lot, some other conventions. You know, people will complain, and you'll hear a staff member just kind of spin it like, oh, that was your fault, or... Oh, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, they're just like, oh, we screwed up. We didn't expect this many people. But, hey, at the same time, you know, you sold too many tickets, and you shouldn't have done that. So if they didn't sell too many tickets, I really wouldn't be able to say anyone did anything bad, but...
Now, if they'd screwed up anything else, I would have thought, all right, it's a big con. I could see you screwing it up. But that's, like, the number one... You have to pay attention to that. The thing they screwed up is the most basic, like, that's like the second thing you do. First you book the place, or you decide what you're going to do or whatever, and then you freaking call them and ask what the capacity is, then you call the fire marshal and have him talk to you.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've done that for events that I ran for my club back when I was in college. It's not that hard. The fire marshal will tell you exactly what the rules are, and if you don't want to deal with the fire marshal, whoever owns the building has a book that'll tell you how many people can be in the
room. Whoever owns the building is responsible for knowing, or else the fire marshal will come and get them.
Yeah.
So, I think that's all we got to say about the New York Comic Con. Okay, so now, I want to talk about something which has been interesting me for quite a while now, since I, you know, somewhat rekindled my interest in comic books, at least American ones. You know, in the past year or so. It's the way they're distributed in North America.
And to put it in a nutshell, for anyone who doesn't want to listen to the whole episode, it's done in an archaic, terrible, backward...
No, it's not archaic. It just sucks. In fact, it's quite new, and that's why it sucks. It's because it goes away from the old good way.
Well, I guess the distribution isn't archaic, but the way people find out about new comics is...
It's not... No, because the archaic implies that it's old. It's actually a very new way of doing it that is less than 20 years old.
I'm talking about the medium. I'm holding a piece of paper
bound
together that tells me when things come out.
That's archaic.
As opposed to looking on the internet and just, or, you know, yeah.
Well, here, let me start from the beginning. In before the early 80s, so before we were alive, comic books in America were distributed the same way magazines were. You know, it's a periodical distribution company. Now, the way this works is, let's say you're a store and you want to sell magazines. You don't really care which magazines you sell. I mean, you can pick and choose because you know some will sell better than others, but that's up to you.
Yeah, some stores don't want to, like Walmart doesn't want to sell pornography, things like that.
Mm-hmm. And you pick which magazines you want and how many issues of each one you want, and you pay a price. They deliver those magazines to you on a monthly basis because they're monthly magazines. Of course, you know, different magazines ship different weeks, so you actually get shipments like weekly when new magazines come out. But, you know, you get them, and if you don't sell them, you're allowed to return them. And that's why magazines are kind of expensive, you know? You go to the store, and if you want to buy, like, you know, a big video game magazine, it can cost you like $5-6. They're not cheap.
Now, the reason that magazines are often sold that way is mostly that it doesn't cost the magazine people as much to print it, and they usually expect that a bunch of them are going to come back, but they want the stores to display the magazine even if the store doesn't think it'll sell. That way, it's basically advertising for the magazine.
Yeah, magazines make their money on the ads and things, so their idea is to just increase readership. And what it the way this works is, this is how you get those stores that sell a million magazines, because you can do, you know, a small magazine can sell if it just gets shelf space. And if stores can return magazines they don't sell, they'll buy copies of freaking everything, because what do they care? They'll return it.
Now, that business model, for anyone who remembers, is what almost killed TSR back in the D&D days.
Yep.
Because TSR had the same thing with all their Dungeons & Dragons books. And Dungeons & Dragons at one point tanked. And stores were sending them back by the truckload. And TSR almost went bankrupt.
Yep. So that's also how books, I think, are sold in normal books, like at Borders and things. Is, you know, if they buy paperback books and they don't want them, they can send them back for a return. Actually, a trade paperback, which is, you know, those big books full of comics.
Yeah, I didn't actually know this until Scott told me.
They're called trade paperbacks because you can't send them back. You know, they stay there. And they're all, trade also means it's like a weird shape and a weird size. It's all publishing terms that I've learned by doing a little bit of research. Now, in the early 80s, the comic books weren't selling so well and they needed more money. So, this guy, his name is Phil Suling, S-U-E-S-E-U-L-I-N-G. He was a convention organizer, actually, a Comic-Con convention organizer. He said, you know what? We're not selling so well on newsstands. Let me find a way to get comics to be more profitable. His idea was that instead of, you know, distributing through the periodical market, you know, distributors, that you, if you wanted to sell comics, you would buy them directly from the publisher. So you would say, Marvel Comics, give me some Spider-Mans. The way this worked is, well, you got a huge discount because you bought them. There were no middlemen between you and the publisher. No one was jacking up the price to make a profit. You also got a huge discount because you couldn't return them. You bought it, you sold it. Or you bought it, it was for you and you read it, you know?
Now, most people, like, when I hear the word trade paperback, I just think, all right, that's the real book format of comic as opposed to the crappy comic format of comic. And I just never put any thought into it beyond that.
Right. So this is what they did in the early 80s, is they switched to this direct delivery where you want to sell comics, you have to buy them direct from the publisher. The problem with this is that now you couldn't get comics so easily in the newsstands and all kinds of places because those places weren't about to buy comic books and try to sell them and not be able to return them. You know, why they're not going to stock something they can't return. So the places to buy comic books were reduced to comic shops. But the price of comics went down and the profitability was maintained. That was until the 90s, where they screwed up by, you know, what happened was the comic book stores, because there was a flood of speculation, people buying comics just to make money off of them. And, of course, those people never made money off of them. So they were shipping way too many, people were buying way too many copies of comics.
This is the era of when, like, two characters would get married or a character would die. So they
And they put holograms on the cover of the comic books and have ten different covers.
They'd issue the same comic book in, like, it had four different covers, and each one would be a different hologram, and collectors would buy, like, eight copies of each one and put them each in their sealed bags and never touch them, hoping to sell them someday for a lot of money.
Now, there's still a little bit of that today, but this is, like, the time when it was an epidemic. Is they would send way too many copies of every comic to the store, and eventually they didn't sell them all, and no one could return them, so the comic book store went out of business. Comic book stores went out of business. The comic book companies have no one else to sell comic books to. Uh-oh. And that was when the 90s comic books pretty went downhill. Then came along this company, Diamond Comic Distributors. Diamond Comic Distributors is a direct distributor. What they do is it's the same old model that they switched to in the early 80s. You know, you buy direct from the publishers, you can't return them, it's really cheap. What they do is they bought, just kind of like Microsoft, they bought every other direct distributor, or the other direct distributors went out of business. So if you want a Marvel or DC comic, the only way to get them for your store is directly distributed through this company, Diamond Distributors. That's it. You can't get them like magazines. You can't. It's it. Only one thing. Tokyo Pop, on the other hand, or Viz, or any of those manga distributors, you know, or manga publishers, they distribute through Diamond also. But they also distribute through the periodical distributors and the bookstore distributors and all kinds of other things, because they don't have an exclusive agreement. But Marvel and DC Comics sell only through Diamond Distributors. So, Diamond Distributors is a company that, because they can give you such a discount, and because things can't be returned, and because the things that they sell are sold in comic book stores, where they know that it's pretty much a place that nerds go to buy things, they have the ability to sell really crazy specialized stuff. And the way it works is they have a catalog that they put out every month that lists every single thing that they are going to distribute to comic book stores 2 months from now. So the March issue of this catalog
is in my hands right now. I've been flipping through it while Scott's been talking.
We'll tell you what's going to come out in May.
Because apparently these people have never heard of the internet.
Well, on the internet, you can get a list of everything that's going to come out in a month. Just a plain text file list. You can't get a picture of everything, and you can't get a description and a price and a all the information. You can't get all of it. You can only get, you know, the base. This is the name, this is the number, this is the price, this is the date. So the idea is that they want you to buy this catalog for $5 to find out. And it gets a little bit out of hand.
Well, first off, just to not to disparage comic book readers, but flipping through this, I'd say at least 60 to 70% of the female characters portrayed in the previews of this book. Now, not counting the ones that are for anime manga, because those are actually normal. All the ones that are from comics, this woman's breasts are bigger than, like, basketballs. They're bigger than her head.
Wow, yeah.
And they're all like this. Oh, God. Every page of this book is just pain.
See, that's the problem with the direct market, that it's a side effect of the distribution. They tried to lower the price, and at the same time, they sacrificed being distributed and sold in a wide variety of places. Only comic book stores. Because only comic book stores, everything they want to sell is targeting a very small demographic of people. So now, everything that gets made is always a superhero comic, it's always some girl with big boobs, it's always, you know, stuff that you can sell a lot of to people in a comic book store.
There's a surprising amount of furry comics in here, too.
Yeah, it's like, so now, the best thing that comic book companies can do, because they've already made a contract with Diamond, they have no choice but to only sell things through Diamond Direct. What they do is they design their product to make it so that they sell it to as many nerds as possible. Whereas other companies, like the manga companies, try to sell to as many people as possible. They target people in general. Whereas Marvel and DC, when they make comic books, they can't sell it to people. They can only sell it in comic book stores or to places that get stuff from Diamond.
The net result of this, there are like 10 different Superman statues in this thing for sale right now. Well, they'll be for sale in 2 months.
Mm-hmm.
There are at least 20 Superman toys where Superman can fly, or you can throw Superman and then he flies, or he shoots discs out of his stomach.
We're not kidding. He shoots discs out of his stomach. So, this is really the reason that comics are not doing so good in this country, is because of this history and the resulting distribution model that currently exists. And a lot of people just don't understand, you know, how it came to be. I didn't understand how it came to be, but now I see the, you know, this is the real reason why, you know, I now that I understand, manga isn't kicking comic books' ass because the art is different or better. You know, people don't seem to care about that. The fact that you don't have to know a whole bunch of history to read the stories is a factor, but it's not the number one factor. The number one factor is that comic books only try to sell to nerds because of the distribution model.
So instead of making, you know, a cool, realistic story about something new and original, they'll try to sell you a, I'm not kidding, Scott said it, I didn't believe him, but then I saw it all over this magazine, Pirate Nightcrawler.
Mm-hmm.
So there's Nightcrawler from the X-Men, right?
You know, the guy who goes, what does he say?
He goes like, bamf, and he teleports.
Yep, that's right.
He's the blue devil-looking guy.
Yep.
So they dressed him up like a pirate and made a bust, and you can buy it for a lot of money.
How much was it?
Like, it was like $50. It wasn't that bad. I mean, the frickin' kryptonite statue that's just a green rock in a glass case was like $200.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's it. There's not even a comic involved. It's just Nightcrawler as his favorite persona in the Danger Room.
See, if comics were still distributed to newsstands and targeted towards all kinds of people, then the boutique-style comic book stores that were trying to get nerd patrons and sell them as much as possible wouldn't really exist or do so well. And thus, things like this wouldn't be able to exist. You know, or you couldn't sell a stupid Superman or a pirate Nightcrawler for $50 because no one would buy it.
Or maybe, let's say that they distributed them in a better way and the stories were good and people generally knew who Nightcrawler was instead of just nerds knowing.
Mm-hmm.
And then people generally knew that Nightcrawler likes to be a pirate in the Danger Room, which only super nerds know. I didn't even know that.
I don't think he does he?
It says that in the magazine.
Does it really?
Yeah.
I've read quite a few, not a lot of X-Men comics, you know.
It might just be made up. Like, it might just be made up to sell this bust. I don't know.
Maybe I've read 50 at most.
But say people knew about that. Then, if you were in just, you know, a general nerd store, not a comic shop, but just a nerd store like the Dragon's Den or Millennium, and you saw a Nightcrawler bust for some money, you might think, oh, that's cool. But this Nightcrawler bust only seems to be marketed toward scary nerds who have every comic that ever had Nightcrawler in it anyway.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's what they do.
I mean, Scott reads, I want to read more comics, I just don't have time. And if I end up commuting to the city on the train, I'm going to be reading mad comics. But Scott's much more into the wet non-anime, non-manga, non-webcomic comic culture. And I'm not so much. And everything I see of it is generally kind of scary, fannish, and just frightening.
Yeah, I don't read that stuff. You know, I try, because there is stuff that gets distributed that isn't, you know, crazy, you know, stupid Marvel DC standards or crazy giant boobage. You know, and I try to find that stuff, and it's pretty hard to find. I mean, you have this giant comic book store full of all this giant catalog worth of shit every month, and there's something in that store that is not selling well because only nerds come to the store. So,
might be awesome. It might have real good mainstream appeal. It might just be a good story, but you'll never find it.
Yeah, because it can only sell it to nerds, because that's the only way to sell comics is in the
Meanwhile,
nerd store.
I can go to freaking Walden Books in the mall. There's a giant, giant manga shelf, and I can just look around and immediately see anything new, anything interesting. I can name a topic and probably find a manga about it.
Mm-hmm. And it's not because it's a manga. It's because the way it's distributed. I mean, Walden Books does have a comic spinner rack, and a lot of grocery stores have it, too.
What, they have, like, Archie?
Yeah, it has Archie because that actually sells to a lot of girls. They have Sonic the Hedgehog, I guarantee it, because that sells. They have Superman, Batman, Spider-Man, Captain America, Fantastic Four, The Avengers, The Justice League, the Green Lantern, all, you know, Batman and Robin, they have the standards, the things that just about anyone will like. And this is actually why, if you go to the store, you'll see, you know, I ask the same question every day. Why are there 5 Spider-Man comic books? You know, why don't they just have Spider-Man, just one comic? Well, they've got Amazing Spider-Man, which is the default. They've got Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man, which is more friendly. They've got Spider-Man Adventures, which is for kids. They've got Marvel Knights Spider-Man, which is all dark and serious and more gory and for more serious readers and mature, whatever. You know, they cover all these...
You sound
these...
like a Halo Xbox fanboy.
Yeah.
I only play mature games.
Yeah. I don't even know the freaking all of them. Don't ask me. I don't pay attention. I just know there's way too many, and thus I can't read any of them at all. And it makes no sense. But it does make sense for this market, because you have a nerd comes into the store. If you only have one Spider-Man comic, he's going to buy one Spider-Man comic a month.
If you have 5...
He's going to buy 5.
Now, we keep saying nerd. This is Geek Nights, and I know we've said it before, but just in case you haven't listened to any of the episodes where we talk about it, we make a big distinction between geek and nerd.
A geek is someone cool and a nerd is not.
Basically, a geek is basically a nerd with social skills, or someone who, like, say you're a car geek, you're interested in cars, you know a lot about cars, but you know what? There are other aspects to your life. A nerd, a car nerd, knows everything about every car, but he's never kissed a girl.
Yep. A nerd is the guy who gets all A's in class.
Worst
all you see
person
him doing
ever.
Is studying and doing work for his class and sucking up to the teacher and doing extra credit. And, you know, he looks like a nerd and walks like a nerd and talks like a nerd. He is a nerd. A geek is just someone who has interest in geeky things or, you know, has hobbies because, you know, that they actually get into.
Yeah, I mean, we're just kind of weird in that we're geeks about a lot of different things. But, yep. We're geeks. We have... I mean, for all the geekery, I freaking mountain bike and do weird crap outside. I'm trying to think of a non-geeky thing that Scott does, but I really can't.
Yeah, everything I do is geeky.
Yeah.
But well, I do a lot of things that
you
are
You cook
geeky.
McDonald's eggs.
I don't cook McDonald's eggs.
You cook
eggs.
McDonald's eggs.
I don't. Whatever. So, yeah. There's a giant catalog called Previews, and that tells you everything Diamond is going to distribute, and it's a scary catalog. And comic book stores have a bad distribution model that is keeping comics in a rut. And it's pretty much a sad state of things, and it'll stay this way for quite a while because Marvel and DC have exclusive contracts with Diamond.
Now, I'd like to hear what the, if the... Because I know you listen to Comic Geek Speak. I'd like to hear if they have some sort of rebuttal to that.
Well, they don't really have a rebuttal. What they... You know, the story is pretty true. And... What they say is, because we had an argument on their forums, or a discussion, it wasn't really a heated argument, about, you know, they said, you gotta buy Previews. They couldn't imagine someone not buying it. And the fact is that some people who get comics get Previews at a really discounted rate or free, because comic book stores want to give it to you so that you can see stuff and get excited about things, because it's just basically a giant advertisement. So giving it to people for free doesn't hurt you so much. They were like, we can't imagine someone not buying it. How would you know what to get?
Now I submit to them, because I don't read a lot of comics yet, but you know what? If I walk into a comic shop and I see it, I know it came out.
Exactly.
If I'm actually interested in it ahead of time, I'll find it on the internets long before I would find it in some magazine that costs money.
Mm-hmm. Now, they had a slight problem in that they knew that you could search for the information on the internet, but their thing was like, oh, that would take so long and be so much effort or whatever. And I was like, and they said, you know what? It doesn't actually matter as long as you get the information and pre-order your comics.
Now, that's where Scott disagrees again, and I am inclined to agree with his disagreeing.
Yes. You see, the Previews tells you what comics are coming out 2 months from now. 2 months. So if it's, what's it, it's March now. So the March Previews tells you it's coming out in May.
All right, by the time May comes around... I'm not going to know or care what comics... 2 months is like a lifetime as far as I'm concerned.
Here's the thing. Because the way the distribution works, comic book stores don't really make a big margin on comics. And if they can't return things, you know, because you buy them, you got them. That's why they have those back issue bins and such, where they try to sell all the comics they didn't sell when they were new. So what they want you to do is... pre-order your comic books the same way you pre-order video games. You know,
now, I could see that if I was like, say I read, Rakuto, and I liked it a lot, Maybe I might want to pre-order more because I already know I like it. That way I don't have to worry about it. I'll just get it.
Yeah, and the way a subscription or a pre-order usually works is you say what you want, and they automatically, they keep a list of your name and what you want, and whenever something you want comes into the store, they put it in a little folder. And then when you come into the store, you go to your folder and you empty it out, and you take all your stuff and you buy it. But you're sort of obligated to buy it if they put it in the folder. You know, it depends on the store and who's running it. And there's some online services that let you order things months in advance. And usually when you order things in advance, you get like a 40% discount. Because, you know, if a store, like a video game store, is the perfect example of how pre-orders save them a lot of money. You know, because you make a $40 video game, the video game store probably paid $30 for. So if they buy five of them and sell one, they lose money. They really have, they want to buy exactly the number they're going to sell, or maybe one more than the number they're going to sell ever, to make the most money. So when they get pre-orders, they know that's a guaranteed sell, that they can buy that many copies. And a comic book store can't, you know, unless you're a crazy huge comic book store, you can't buy everything in this diamond catalog. So you need to pick and choose. You pretty much have to shop for your customers.
Now, point the first. If I haven't already read an issue of something, there's no way in hell I'm going to pre-order it.
That's for sure.
Two, it's a freaking comic book. I barely even pre-order video games.
Yeah, I only pre-order something if it's going to sell out right away, and I also want it right away.
I mean, if I don't want something right away, even if I know it's going to sell out, I don't pre-order it because it'll sell out, and then they'll make more, and then I'll buy it later, probably cheaper.
Yeah, I only pre-order if I'm worried that they're not going to make more, this is it, or I want it right now, like a Zelda game that's coming out.
Twilight Princess, we should actually pre-order that soon.
Yeah, for what, next year, 2 years from now?
Yeah.
So the reason comic book stores want you to pre-order is because when you pre-order, it allows the comic book store to know what people want so that they can order the correct amount of copies and make more profit. At the same time, if a comic book isn't necessarily mainstream, or by mainstream, I mean mainstream to the nerds themselves, you know, like a Marvel or a DC, like Batman is a mainstream comic, you know, all the nerds buy Batman, but all the nerds don't buy Rocketo. Half of them don't, never even heard of it. Actually, 90% of them never even heard of it. But if a bunch of people pre-order Rocketo, that'll make sure that that comic book store owner will be sure to buy it from Diamond, which will get, which is, that is what really counts when giving money to the creators of Rocketo, you know? So you want to pre-order to make sure that the guys buy it. Now, my point was, pre-ordering is stupid because it's a comic book. Why should I pre-order it? We already said that. But the only reason that pre-ordering is necessary is because of this stupid direct Diamond distribution, you know, business model. If you throw the stupid business model away of Diamond distributing to boutique comic book stores, we don't have to do this stupid pre-ordering. Every comic will be in every freaking store the same way every magazine is in every freaking store, and everything will be terrific. And they didn't really say much to that. They were just kind of like,
Well, I guess since we've gone long again, we've gone long all week, it seems like this is just complaining week.
Yeah,
no, it's a themed week. We've complained about things all week.
But also learning.
Yeah, learning and complaining.
Yep. You learn an ugly truth, and then you complain about it.
So what have we learned this week? Monday, we learned about Lestal, and then I complained about how it doesn't do some things.
Mm-hmm.
Tuesday, we complained about the Penny Arcade game.
Yep.
Today, we complained about comics and the New York Comic Con.
Yep.
Tomorrow, we're going to complain about Hollywood.
Great.
Now, the only reason we came up with this idea out of the blue, and we're not going to talk about Hollywood or bad movies as in awesome bad movies like, you know, Hard Rock Zombies or SARS Wars.
Or The Terrible Thing from Space. Ooh, it's a
no,
you know.
We're talking about Garfield, Kangaroo Jack, and the reason this all came up is
crappy teen movie number 3.
Snakes on a Plane.
Snakes?
Motherfucking Snakes on a Plane.
As in, planes flying in the air.
Yeah, yeah.
So what did the snakes get, like, chopped up in the propellers, or they get sucked into the jet engine?
They're just on the plane, and Samuel L. Jackson has to stop them.
Does he have he better have a long stick with a spiky bit at the end.
He better have a Chuck Norris on the end of a rope.
That'd be a good one.
All right.
Indiana Jones wouldn't do it for you. I'm
so sorry. Stay tuned tomorrow if you want to hear us complain for one more day. And And that was Geek Nights with Rim and Scott. Special thanks to DJ Pretzel for our opening theme.
Be sure to visit our website at www.frontrowcrew.com. If you like our podcast, you'll love our forums. Make sure you visit them. You can send your email feedback to geeknights@gmail.com. And if you want, you can leave us a voicemail at 206-333-1537.
Geek Nights airs every weeknight, Monday through Thursday.
Geek Nights is recorded with absolutely no studio and no audience. But unlike those other talk shows, it's actually recorded at night.